ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we'll be reading from the fifth canto, text chapter 25, entitled The Glories of Lord Anantadev, text number 9. So this verse is in, it's not in prose. Krishnapada just didn't know that it was in prose, so it's not on the board. Utpatti stitilaya hetavosya kalpag satvadyak prakriti gunayad ikshayasan yarupam dhruvam akritam yadekam atman nanadat kattam uhaveda tasya vartma. Synonyms. Utpatti, of the creation. Utpatti, of the creation. Siti, maintenance. Laya, and disillusion. Hetavaha, the original causes. Asya, of this material world. Kalpa, capable of acting. Sattva, Adya, headed by the Sattva Guna. Prakriti Guna, the modes of material nature. Yat, of whom? Ikshaya, by the glance. Asan, became. Yat Rupam, the form of whom? Dhruvam, unlimited. Akritam, uncreated. Yat, who? Ekam, one. Atman, in himself. Nana, variously. Adat, has manifested. Katam, how? Uha, certainly. Veda, can understand. Tasya, his. Vartma, path. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace H.D. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. By his glance, the Supreme Personality Godhead enables the modes of material nature to act as the causes of universal creation, maintenance, and destruction. The Supreme Soul is unlimited and beginningless, and although he is one, he has manifested himself in many forms. How can human society understand the ways of the Supreme? Purport. From Vedic literature, we learn that when the Supreme Lord glances, sa aikshata, over the material energy, the three modes of material nature become manifest and create material variety. Before he glances over the material energy, there is no possibility of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material world. The Lord existed before the creation, and consequently he is eternal and unchanging. Therefore, how can any human being, however great a scientist or philosopher he may be, understand the ways of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The following quotations from Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adi Khand 1:48-52 and 1:58-69, tell of the glories of Lord Ananta. Kid Brahma kis Shiva kis Sanakadi Kumara Vyasa Sukha Naradadi Bhakta Nama Yandra. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the four Kumaras, Sanaka, Sanatana, Sananda, and Sanat Kumara, Vyasadeva, Shukadeva Goswami, and Narada, are all pure devotees, eternal servants of the Lord. Sabara Pujita Sri Ananda Mahashaya, Sahasra Vadana Prabhu Bhakti Rasamaya, Lord Sri Ananta is worshipped by all the uncontaminated devotees mentioned above. He has thousands of hoods and is the reservoir of all devotional service. Adideva Mahayogi Ishvara Vaishnava Mahimara Anta Inhana Janaye Sabha. Lord Ananta is the original person and the great mystic controller. At the same time, he is the servant of God, a Vaishnava. Since there is no end to his glories, no one can fully understand him. Sevana Sunila Ebe Shuna Takurala Atmatantre Yenamate Vaisena Patala. I have already spoken to you of his service to the Lord. Now hear how the self-sufficient Anandadev exists in the lower planetary system of Patala. Shri Narada Gosani Tumburu Kari Sange Yayas Yasha Gayena Brahmastane Shloka Vande. Bearing his stringed instrument, the Tumburu, on his shoulder, the great sage Narada Muni always glorifies Lord Ananta. Narada Muni has composed many transcendental verses in praise of the Lord. Srishti Siti Pralaya Satvari Yataguna Yana Drishti Patehaya Yaya Punak Punak. Simply due to the glance of Lord Ananta, the three material modes of nature interact and produce creation, maintenance, and annihilation. These modes of nature appear again and again. Advitiya Rupa Satya Anadi Mahatva Tatapi Anantahaya Ke Bhuje Se Satatva. The Lord is glorified as one without a second, and as the Supreme Truth who has no beginning. Therefore he is called Anantadev, unlimited. Who can understand him? Shuddha Sattva Murti Prabhu Dharena Karunaya Ye Vigrahe Sabara Prakasha Shulilaya. His form is completely spiritual, and he manifests it only by his mercy. All the activities in this material world are conducted only in his form. Yanhara Taranga Sikhi Singha Mahavali Nija Jana Mano Ranje Hanya Kutu Hali. He is very powerful and always prepared to please his personal associates and devotees. Yayananta Namera Shravana Sankirtane Yete Matekene Nahi Bole Yete Jane Ashesha Janmera Banda Chinde Sekshane Ateva Vaishnavana Chare Kavutane. If we simply try to engage in the congregational chanting of the glories of Lord Anantadev, the dirty things in our hearts accumulated during many births will immediately be washed away. Therefore, a Vaishnava never loses an opportunity to glorify Anantadev. Sheshabhai Samsarera Gatinahiara Anantara Name Sarva Jivera Udara. Lord Anantadev is known as Shesha, the unlimited end, because he ends our passage through this material world. Simply by chanting his glories, everyone can be liberated. Ananta Prithivi Giri Samudra Sahite Ye Prabhu Dharena Gire Palana Karite. On his head, Anantadev sustains the entire universe, with its millions of planets containing enormous oceans and mountains. Sahasra Panara Eka Pane Binduyena Ananta Vikramana Janina Achehena. He is so large and powerful that this universe rests on one of his hoods, just like a drop of water. He does not know where it is. Sahasra Vadane Krishna Yasha Nirantara Gaite Achena Arideva Mahidara. While bearing the universe on one of his hoods, Anandadev chants the glories of Krishna with each of his thousands of mouths. Gayena Ananta Sri Yashera Nahianta Jaya Banga Nahi Karu Donhe Balavanta. Although he has been chanting the glories of Lord Krishna since time immemorial, he has still not come to their end. Adyapiha shesha deva sahasra shimuke, gaina chaitanya yasha antanahi deke. To this very day, Lord Anantadev continues to chant the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he still finds no end to them. Omigana timaranda syagananjana shalaka chakshur unmilitangena tasmai shri gurvin maha. Namang vishnupadai krishna prasai buddhale shimate paladananda swami dvane. Namang vishnupadai krishna prasai buddhale shimate bhaktivedanta swami nidavane. Namaste sarsata deve gaurvani vicharne nirvishesha shunivadi paschatya adhyashicharne. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for the opportunity to render some service. So, this particular chapter here is quite nice. The whole chapter is glorifying the activities and qualities of Lord Anantadev, also known as Shesha. Because Shesha, he's known as the servitor personality of Godhead, because his very desire is to serve Krishna in every way possible. So there's Lord Baladev expands himself in five primary ways. His first expansion is Mahasankarshan. And from Mahasankarshan comes the rest of the Chaturvyuha. In Mahasankarshan, he's the creator and maintainer of all the Vaikuntha Loka planets. He maintains the whole spiritual sky. And then from Mahasankarshan comes the Purusha avatars. So these are three of the other five forms of that Lord Baladev takes. Krana Dakshaya Vishnu, Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu, and Kshira Dakshaya Vishnu. Krana Dakshaya Vishnu, he enters the causal ocean. He's also known as Mahavishnu, and from him come the unlimited universes. With every breath, unlimited universes come out of the pores of his body. It's explained just like dust particles travel out through a screen. And with every inhalation, those innumerable universes are again brought within his body. So when these universes come out, Mahavishnu expands as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. He lays down in the Garbhadak ocean, and from his navel sprouts a lotus flower. On top of that lotus flower is the first created living entity, Lord Brahma. And Garbhadakshaya Vishnu simultaneously expands as Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, as the Supersoul within the heart of all living entities and also within every atom. And so then the fifth expansion of Lord Balaram is Shesha, or Lord Anantadev. And since Shesha considers himself a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his desire is to do everything in his power to assist and serve, to personally serve Krishna. So it's mentioned in the fifth chapter. By the way, the fifth chapter of the Adi Lila is really phenomenal. It really helps round out our understanding of all these things that are talked about in this particular chapter in the Bhagavatam. Because the fifth chapter details the glories of Lord Nityananda Ram. And so consequently it explains the whole manifestation of the spiritual and material worlds, because all these worlds are created by Lord Balaram. And so it's mentioned in the 10th text of that 5th chapter that Sesha, is responsible for the personal service of the Lord, and he is called Ananta, or unlimited, because he assists the personality of Godhead in his unlimited expansions by performing an unlimited variety of services. Now this is the love that Shesha has for Krishna. His love is so strong that he can serve Krishna unlimitedly. I mean, even though we're all just jivas here, but just think about that. We have some small desire to want to serve Krishna, but even with this small desire, we're so limited in our capability, we're so limited with what we can actually do, how far we can actually go with our service. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm on a stationary bicycle. Has anyone ever been on a stationary bike before? Yeah, or a treadmill. You know, you're putting out so much effort, so much endeavor, and you're not going anywhere. You're just stuck in the same spot. You know, and then you, like for those older stationary bikes, you increase the friction on the rear tire. And so then it's like really difficult to even, you know, push the pedals around. And still you're not going anywhere, but you're exhausted. So this is what it's like being a jiva here in this material world. Because for whatever reason, we've come here due to our improper desires. Because in the spiritual world, everything is made to fulfill our desires to serve Krishna. You know, the very land of the spiritual world is made of Chintamani. Means each stone will satisfy any wish that we have, any desire we have. Automatically it's satisfied. Even before we get done even dreaming up whatever desire it is, automatically it's already done. All the trees are kapha vriksha trees. They're wish-fulfilling trees. All the cows, they're kamadhenus. They can supply anything you want. That's the nature of the spiritual world. Everything in the spiritual world can supply you anything you want, any desire you want, even the devotees. And yet here we are in the material world, and because we desire something other than Krishna's service, we have to work very, very hard like an ass for anything that we want. And we only get that after expending gallons of sweat and tears, struggling after our material desires. So consequently, when we try to engage in Krishna's service after being conditioned for so many countless millions and millions of births, it's difficult. Because just like a parent whose wayward child has been misbehaving for many, many years, and then the child all of a sudden claims, oh, well, I'll be a good son now, I'll be a good daughter now, you know, please let me do this, let me do that, the parent's going to be a little bit skeptical. You know, it's going to be like, okay, well, are you sure? Sure you're not going to do those old things again? You know, so that's what Maya is for. Maya is here to test us, to make sure that our desire is sincere. You know, so Maya will send us so many different things, all these different opulences of the material world that everyone's hankering so much after. She will send those opulences. And then she can see where our real desire lies. Many people, as soon as they get a little bit of opulence, once they practice Krishna consciousness, they leave. Because their desire has been fulfilled. They're no longer interested. I've heard stories of some people who practiced Krishna consciousness a little bit, then they got a large sum of money. And so they sent everything back. All their books, their beads, their dhotis, everything. And I don't need these anymore. You know, which is pretty sad. But it's happened. Because their desires are filled. They got what they wanted. So, switching over to a different point, it's mentioned in the translation that the Supreme Personality of Godhead enables the modes of material nature to act as the causes of universal creation, maintenance, and destruction, and he does this by his glance. So this is really amazing also. It's described that Mahavishnu is residing on the causal ocean. And the causal ocean is in between the spiritual and material worlds. The causal ocean is transcendental. It has no contact with material energy. And Mahavishnu, he's lying on the bed of Anantashesh. In some places it's described that it's the glance of Anantashesh. In other places it's described that it's the glance of Mahavishnu. But travels through the Pradhan and activates the Pradhan. The Pradhan is also known as Prakriti, and it's also known as Avyakta. It's known as Avyakta because it's unmanifest. And it's known as Prakriti because it's the material nature. But it's primarily known as Pradhan because that's the most important name for it. That's the name for it as the origin or that which manifests all these different ingredients of material nature. And so this glance of Mahavishnu, or this glance of Lord Anantadev, this glance is a transcendental glance. And this glance doesn't actually have anything to do with material energy. It never actually comes in contact with material energy, even though it's traveling through the Pradhan. This is described in great detail in the fifth chapter of the Adi Lila. And it's described there in the Adi Lila that this Pradhan is enveloped by a cloud of ignorance. And so the reflection of this glance off of this cloud, this ignorant cloud, that reflection is what actually mixes with the material energy. And it's described in the Brahma Samhita that this reflection is Lord Shiva. And so when Lord Shiva is mixing with the modes of material nature, this is what actually causes all the material energy to manifest. Where before this mixing occurs, the three gunas, sattva-gun, rajagun, tamagun, they're still in existence because they're eternal. It's just that they're in an unmanifest state. They're lying dormant. So they're not active at that time. But once Lord Shiva begins mixing and interacting with Prakriti, or the Parvati is another name for her, then these different modes of material nature become active and they start competing for dominance. And so this is really one really amazing thing, considering what was mentioned about Anantadev in the purport. How it's mentioned that Lord Anantadev is so large and powerful that this universe rests on one of his hoods, just like a drop of water. He does not know where it sits. So this is amazing for many, many reasons. One reason is just how insignificant this material universe is. So all the infinite universes, each one is resting individually on a separate head of Lord Anantadev. And Anantadev is acting as the bed of Mahavishnu. Yet these universes are so insignificant that he doesn't even know where the universe is on his head. Now that's pretty tiny, that's pretty insignificant. And within each of these insignificant universes, ours is the most insignificant, it's the smallest. And within this smallest of all universes resides unlimited numbers of planets and galaxies. It's so unlimited it bewilders all of the material scientists. And of all these different galaxies and planets lies this tiny planet Earth. And on this tiny planet Earth, there are these tiny little continents floating in the ocean. And on this small continent of North America is this tiny little nation called the United States. Within that tiny little nation of the United States is an even smaller little state of California. And in that minuscule state of California lies this very dinky, teeny tiny city called Los Angeles. Within that tiny city of Los Angeles is this little subdivision called Palms. Within that Palm subdivision, there's an even smaller street called Huasteca. And on that street of Huasteca is this unlimitedly large temple of Shinu Dwarka Dham. But it's just nice having some perspective where we actually are. And even this time scale for our entire existence, from birth until death, we could be fasting our entire existence to celebrate the Vyasa Puja of Sri Brahma. Because today is actually Lord Brahma's 50th birthday. And in Lord Brahma's time, we're not even to noon yet. We're barely like 10:30, 11 o'clock his time. And since he's the Adi Guru of our whole parampara, we could be fasting for our entire existence just in observance of his Vyasa Puja. So sometimes it's nice just to put a little perspective on things, to see the scale of things that we're talking about. I mean, how many times throughout the day do we actually consider these different things? Usually not very much. That's why it's said in the translation here, how can human society understand the ways of the Supreme? It's just incomprehensible. And so then the other aspect that I was thinking of in reference to Lord Anandadev carrying the universes on his heads, these universes, they're little balls of ignorance. It's spiritual energy covered with this ignorant covering of matter. It's really dirty and filthy. You know, it's so filthy that even Mahavishnu's glance has nothing to do with it. It's just so repugnant. Because it's every living entity that's residing within this material nature is averse to devotional service. And so for a pure devotee, that's a very repugnant thought. But yet, Lord Anantadev, he understands that Krishna has a purpose. He has a purpose for the manifestation of the material world. It's for the rectification of the wayward jiva souls. And so wanting to serve Krishna to the best of his ability, and because he's so humble, he's the supreme servant. He's so humble that he's taking this most filthy, dirty thing and putting it on his head. You know, like sometimes when we want to show respect to someone that's senior to us, we touch their feet. We put the dust of their lotus feet on their head. Even though feet is the filthiest part of the body, one of the filthiest parts. It's really dirty. It's always on the ground. It's getting dirty and nasty. It smells. Yet we touch those feet and we put the dust on our head. You know, so Lord Anantadev, he's taking these filthy, dirty universes and he's putting them on his head. That's how much he loves Krishna. That's how much he wants to serve. That's how great his desire for service is. So even if we could have just a small, insignificant fraction of a drop of Lord Anantadeva's desire to serve Krishna, our lives would be perfect. So that's why we can sing the glories of Lord Anantadeva unlimitedly, just as Lord Anantadeva is singing the glories of Krishna unlimitedly. As described, the more that we sing the glories of Lord Anantadeva, then the more we become purified. And we can actually become free from the modes of material natures, the clutches of material energy, by singing his glories. Just like Narada Muni, another of the great previous acharyas in our disciplic succession, he is constantly singing the glories of Lord Anantadeva on his Tumburu, traveling all over the universe, proclaiming the glories of Lord Anantadeva. So I think I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Savas Prabhu?
Kind of interesting on the topic was that my wife just told me that this morning just some headline about this guy named Hawkins, and he just made a new comment today, and I think his new... What's that?
Stephen Hawking.
Yeah. Stephen Hawkins, yeah.
Very famous scientist.
Some very famous. I think he just did a revision of his understanding of the universe, and his revision is that it just happened. He said that it was just, everything was just perfect, everything lined up just perfectly, and then this whole manifestation just happened. So very interesting how you're talking about that subject matter, and it's incredible how a person considered to be very intellectual and very brilliant, in fact, in terms of the material world, can be making such a serious mistake in terms of existence. It's kind of ridiculous considering what you're just saying. And what you're saying, if someone heard that, they would say that's ridiculous. In other words, those that are non-devotees or non-believers, atheists, they would say everything that you said in this class today was absurd and ridiculous, and it makes no sense in terms of proper understanding. So it's kind of a standoff, because you're just saying all this, and then here, this person's considered to be a extremely brilliant individual. I think he has some kind of phenomenal IQ, in fact, in terms of, you know, measurement. But here, this person says that it just all lined up one day, and all this manifested. So you were created, and I was created out of a lineup. You know, it was just right. So who are we supposed to believe here?
Well, Stephen Hawking is an incredibly brilliant fool. He has no way of verifying or proving any of his speculative theories. Through this path of Krishna consciousness, through these Vedas, you can verify everything. It just requires proper training. You know, just like so many people, they would come to Prabhupada and challenge, "Can you show me God?" And Prabhupada would respond, "Are you qualified to see God?" So that's the main problem. None of us are qualified. Well, hardly any of us. There are some, I'm sure, who are qualified. But hardly any of us are actually qualified to directly experience. Because all these things talked about in the Vedas can be directly experienced. It's called pratyaksha. And we can have direct experience of all these different things talked about in the Vedas. We simply have to engage in the proper activities. Whereas all these speculative theories of these so-called scientists, you can't experience it. And even when you can experience it, these very experiments are done with imperfect senses based upon imperfect senses. For instance, recently they remeasured the size of the proton, and they found out that the proton is actually 4% smaller than they previously thought it was. This doesn't sound like a really big deal, 4% big deal. But for these physicists, this blows out all their atomic theories. They have to reformulate everything. So a lot of them are denying that the proton is actually 4% smaller because it ruins all their theories. Or Stephen Hawking is also known to have said that he believes in aliens. He believes that there's life on other planets. He thinks that they're antagonistic to Earth and that we have to fear for our lives of being attacked by aliens. And previously, other great Vaishnavas like Madhavendra Puri has sufficiently proven with mathematics that if life exists on any other planet in any form, it effectively disproves through mathematical probability that it's just chance, it's just all lined up by chance, because the probability is so infinitesimally insignificant that it's, mathematically speaking, impossible for it to have happened in that way. So even within Stephen Hawking's own statements, it's inconsistent. How can he say that he believes in aliens if he says that it all just happened by chance? Those are mutually exclusive things. If there's aliens, then it proves by statistics that it didn't happen by chance. So that's the problem with material scientists. They're all fools. They're ignorant, blind people fumbling around in the dark. Like when you have the story of the five foolish people who are trying to figure out what an elephant is. One's grabbing a hold of the tail, another the ear, another the trunk, another the legs, another the belly. Each one is describing a different thing. But because they're all blind, none of them can actually tell what it actually is. So each person is thinking that he's an authority, he's an acharya on a certain subject. I know the elephant. The elephant is very long and it's like a tube. And others say, no, an elephant is very broad and it's very round. And others say, no, an elephant is very flat and skinny. Each one is saying a different thing. And each one is dead set that they're right and that everyone else is wrong. Because they're each working with imperfect senses. Yes, Prabhu.
So the real interesting point is that basically the Bhagavatam speaks about these things just to give some education or some understanding of the creation. But ultimately the real purpose is to love Krishna.
Yeah.
So we see that Stephen Hawking, even though he maybe has a theory and he has some perspective of creation, still if you follow it, you still have to go through the pains of birth, death, old age, and disease, and repeated death. So what is the benefit of that knowledge? In other words, he may have that knowledge, and no one else may not have.
Mm-hmm.
He may be the only one that knows that. And so he may be godlike, but it doesn't really solve the problem of 12% unemployment, or poor people, or people starving. In other words, even though someone may have that so-called mundane knowledge, it doesn't really benefit anyone. Whereas you see in Krishna consciousness, you can have the knowledge of the creation, but ultimately the purpose is to get out of this material world and go back to Godhead and live eternally in ecstasy. So even if we have these particular debates, what is the result of his knowledge and what is the result of Krishna consciousness? And we see the difference is that you can become eternally immortal and happy and satisfied, whereas you might become like Stephen Hawking in your next life.
And look at Stephen Hawking. He's a paraplegic. He's bound in a wheelchair.
Yes. That could be the result.
Which is a very miserable existence.
So we have to pray for him.
Enjoy. Hi. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.